Mr. Chadwick, Reel 22. We're talking about your time with the mortar platoon of the support company, 1st Battalion DLI, in the front line in the Nachum area. What we're looking at is the sort of conditions of service once you've taken up the front line position. You were describing a hoochie. You said very heavily defended. About what dimensions are we talking, and for how many men?
Well, they were big enough. It's a precise measurement. I can't really say precisely, but to give you an idea, we used to make beds out of two Angoline crickets and machine gun liners. The liners are the belts that counted machine gun bullets. And of course, when suspended, we used to lash them around these crickets to make a mattress. Wasn't very high, and you'd have four to five beds in one dugout. Mind you, there was no space, but you had accommodation for four to five to sleep in each dugout. A little cubbyhole for a box for a table. And, I'd say 10 by 10.
And how tall? How much headroom?
Well, sufficient headroom, 6 foot 7.
So they were dugouts. They were dug down as well as...
Dug into the ground.
And who would prepare the hoochie? Who would dig it? Would you dig it?
Well, they were dug in advance.
The previous occupant.
But after heavy shelling in summer, whoever was occupying there would dig their own, which happened quite often.
So you lived in was there a hoochie space for every man then?
Every man had a hoochie to go to.
And they'd be in the front. Now you'd be a bit further back in the mortar. So, but it would be the same for the men in the front.
Same setup, but a little bit. We could relax a bit more because we weren't taking the shelling at that stage if they were.
Now, when you got into the line, would you? How would you dispose of your mortars, you know, because you'd be back with the reserve company, I presume, or would you be back beyond the reserve company?
You'd be on a par with the reserve company.
How would you set up your mortars? I mean, would they be in a line, or how would you?
Totally in a line.
How far between them?
Well, it doesn't matter, really. You can have 6 yards, 6 feet, usually about 3 yards apart.
And were they dug in at all? I mean, were they in a trench?
No. Just bedded into the base plate, bedded into the ground.
So they were on the surface?
Oh, they're on the surface, on the reverse slope of the feature.
So they'd have to be lucky to get a shell to exactly go over the...
Well, its chief characteristic is its ability to lay down fire where small arms fire is immune. I.e., small arms fire can't do that. Well, that's its chief characteristic. But, of course, the enemy's chief characteristic is just the same.
So you were vulnerable to mortars and possibly...
Artillery.
Howitzers or guns?
Well, heavy guns, really. A howitzer is a big mortar.
So you'd have your guns thing, you'd bed them in. Would you fire a couple of bedding-in rounds?
To bed the weapon in.
And then, were they not a bit vulnerable sat on the surface? Two other mortars.
Oh no. Your protection was the dead ground in front of you.
But if the mortar shells came back to you?
Well, if they got a line on you, then you were in trouble. But that's a chance. But the reverse slope that we had was quite high. So there was very little chance I was getting caught there. Now, what I'd like to relate at this stage is we relieved the Vandoos.
Who were they?
The French Canadians, the lunatics of Korea. They were mad.
In what way?
They were drunk. They blew mortars up. They were wild men.
How did they blow mortars up?
It was so ill trained that I was playing today. A motor gets very hot when you're doing a rapid shoot. And of course, one cowboy, obviously not well trained at all, threw some cold water on the barrel. The next bomb that went down killed the six of them.
Why?
It cooled the barrel from extreme heat to extreme cold, which took the nature out of the metal. And the next bomb that went down just blew the whole thing to bits. Killed a lot of them. But we learned from them, because our first shoot, one of the early shoots, we got a range of about 3,500. Urgently. Well, we couldn't meet it.
Why not?
We have the range. Even with a near night booster, get that extra 200 yards. So the band of the officer said, that's easily rectified. Get six cups and a jerry can. So we've got a jerry can full of benzene, and we poured a cup of petrol. Poured petrol into each cup. Poured a cup of petrol into the barrel and threw the bomb down. My God, the flash that came out. That betrayed our position, the flash. But we gained the extra 300 to 400 yards and caught that target that night. And that's something they don't teach you at the school of infantry, putting petrol down the barrel. But it worked.
I mean, was that a common trick amongst units in the field, mortars in the field?
It was. I don't know whether anybody used it. If the band used it, does I? Because they said back some petrol in and it worked.
So you'd only use it in these extreme occasions?
Oh, absolutely.
Was it dangerous?
Of course.
I'm thinking of when the barrel heated up, pouring petrol in it might not be.
Not helping at all. We were all tongue in cheek. Yet we had to get bombs out for these boys who were caught.
Was it your own? Was it the Durhams who were caught or another unit?
Well, our lads had called for assistance for the mortars to be brought down at figures 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Of course, they don't know where the mortars are. When the OP lad picked that message up, worked it out on his map, he couldn't get it. So he came back to me, and I said, well, look, you put us on range in line, and we'll send the confetti over and see how far we're off. I think we can make it. And we did. He didn't know what we'd done. But the flash that came out of that fire was horrific. And of course, the motors were used a lot for deception.
I'm going to come on to the special shooting. So you'd bed your mortars in, so they'd just be completely, you wouldn't put anything round them at all, sandbags or anything?
Oh yeah, he dug a little hole just to segregate the mortars. About
2 foot?
3 foot deep. So,
and sandbagged it?
A few sandbags. I mean, it wasn't to protect you from anything. Just to segregate each mortar.
Now, would you have a trench or a slit trench, or would you just have a hoochie nearby?
CP.
CP?
Mine, gold mine at command post. John Arnott and I slept in there. He was on the job where I was on the job.
So what was, can you describe the command post, or was it just like a hoochie, or was it a hoochie?
It was a hoochie with a wireless setting, improvised desk, tilly lamps.
So the wireless set, what pattern were you using then?
Well, we have a regimental signaller, plus our own signaller. Our own signaller was signalling from mortar line to OP. And the regimental signaller was signalling from battalion headquarters with target indications. They would send where they wanted mortars to be deployed.
So were there two sets, or... Just the one set, two signals. Two sets.
Two sets.
And would you have much to do with that?
Oh, yeah. You'd be talking to the OB man during the shoot.
Direct.
He would say, go left, go right, plus, minus, whatever, or on target.
Direct to you.
Oh, direct.
So the signaller would just hand you the set.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd just take over the set, listening to it.
Was it headphones and...
Headphones and mic. Well, throat mics used to have. But suddenly, which was good for the infantry patrols. Because you could just mouth the commands and...
So you'd be on, if you were at the command post, you'd be getting instructions from the OP, and that would be Arnott, would it, normally at the OP, or you at the OP?
No, we'd spend a week. Then we'd send a corporal or one of the sergeants up, because we're all well trained. Our main role was to make sure everything went right.
So you and Arnott would normally be in the command post?
The command post, or in the vicinity. Of course, he would be going back to conferences.
So when you got the order, the corrections, what would you then do? Shout it through?
Stand outside the command post. Your mortars are all in front of you with a megaphone. Up 200, left 2 degrees, fire. And then wait to see how we recorded that. And you give them all the verbal instructions by megaphone.
So you'd fire, it'd be fairly deliberate firing until you got on the target, would it?
Oh, yeah, well, you'd be what you call bubble chasing.
What's that?
Trying to find exactly where you get that pattern on the ground, the target area that you wanted.
Would you fire, while you were ranging, would you fire all six mortars or would you just fire one?
You fire one at a time when you're ranging. And then... You fire one, we used to work the bracketing system. One plus, one minus, one in the middle. And all by then, you've got roughly, and it should only be roughly, the area you want those mortars to be in. But we were firing. You could fire a bomb on a set range and line this morning. At 2,800, and it would drop to 2,200, and it was purely climatical. Everybody went through it, so you'd allow for that. So after every morning, you'd invariably sneak a ranging bomb up to see how the climate was affecting the chute. And then modified for the rest of the day.
What was it about the climate that affected the chute?
I mean, nobody could tell you. It was incredible. Sometimes they say, oh, 2,800 piece of cake. We couldn't get a bomb there. The next day you go to 3,200 on the same range of time.
But what was it? I mean, was it the air pressure or the wind or what?
You know, the bomb is there. There was something out there affecting the chute. Some said it was air crashes. He had a fancy name for it. What we used to do at morning, get the old clear from headquarters and get a couple of bombs off. And he said, oh, pretty much like this thing. So we can stipulate the range of lines that we have.
With that variation, wasn't there a risk of you landing bombs on your own troops? I mean, if there's that 600 yards difference, that could well be the difference between no man's land or in front and a front line.
I don't think it ever happened, but it was quite possible. Quite possible.
How far in front of the infantry would you shoot? I mean, what was, your safety zone?
Well, they're not used for creeping infantry in interaction or out. Well, out's a different kind of thing.
But if you were putting a defence line in front of the infantry, how close would you get?
Well, They're not made for that level because they're not accurate enough. As I said, very important to remember, the beaten sword 600 by 400. So a well organised multiple team can drop them down anywhere between 600 down to nothing. So you have a 600 yard area. So it's non calibrated. It's an area weapon, so it's not useful. And when troops fall mortars down to help them, they're in dire straits. They are really in trouble. And it's only where other fire can't get that they'll call for it. But they must be prepared to take some of the confetti that comes off it.
So what's the role? What would you say the role was?
Well, it's the infantryman's own artillery. That's the version he's given.
To be used in what circumstances?
Well,
ideally.
It's wonderful for deception.
Right, what's that then?
Well, if we were going to attack that television tonight, the commanding officer would ask us to put mortar fire down on that reading lamp over there and stomp it 3 or 4 times during the day as if one was softening up that area for an assault. And then, of course, that night, the attack would go into there. And in the meantime, we'd have struck round to be available if needed on this. The wall in a static position is nothing like the wall in a mobile war like Greece or anything where you're moving. You can move a mortar in those circumstances and engage houses, farmhouses. There was nothing like that up there at all. It was just raw comfort, really.
How far were the enemy away? You know, I mean, what was the width of No Man's Land, roughly?
Between the FDL, which was over 36 parallel, to Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, with the enemy features, I remember them vividly. We're talking a mile and a half of No Man's Land. Now, this is where the work was. Patrol, 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 to dominate that No Man's Land. As opposed to the Americans, who put up a ring of steel, part of them mounted Brownings and didn't patrol. Hence, they were overrun time and time again. Killed sweeping, killed in the dugouts. They would not dominate No Man's Land. By that I mean, go out and patrol it nightly and deprive the enemy of the valley floor. You have to warm that valley floor.
So you were on, you were behind a hill on one side of the valley, then it dipped down into the valley floor wasn't occupied by anybody, and then on the other side there were four hills, four features of the opposing side of the valley, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. And what was the nature of the floor of the valley? I mean, what sort of terrain are we talking?
Oh, just like, well, it wasn't heather, but it was similar to Scotland. Rugged.
So not forest or anything like that?
All the trees were gone. What trees were gone and blasted away by artillery fire.
And it was about a mile across?
I'd say about a mile.
What was the river?
Behind us was the, what was the famous river in Korea? The River Indian. And then further north, you know, going up to the Yalu River.
But what was the, you know, you were, the valley in front of you, was there a river in that?
There was a river there.
Was it a stream or?
No, oh, there was little riverless, as you might say, nothing yet. But I think at this stage, Peter, you should say that up to Christmas, I was with the military team, but just before Christmas, came out the line for Christmas to relieve the Black Watch. Well, they relieved us so that we could have Christmas out the line.
Now, and then you changed to a rifle company, I presume. Let's stick with the mortar just for a minute, because so you'd set up your positions, and what was your kind of daily routine, if we can look at that? You know, from say, I mean, would you have someone on guard during the night?
Probably at all times.
Even in the mortar platoon? So you or Arnott would be in there, or one of the sergeants.
24 hours a day.
What length shifts would you do?
Well, then he might go away. Let's face it, that first couple of months for us under there wasn't tough at all. We could get through during the day when we weren't being told rest. Go out and get a bucket of water and have a good wash, which you wouldn't be able to do later on Saturday. Quite enjoyable. It's had a good breaking in.
So you'd be on duty, or if so, you'd be working. What was your work routine when you were on the command post? How would you spend your period on duty?
Waiting for any instructions that might come in from battalion headquarters. The sergeants who were looking after the mortar line, you see, was looked after the sets. But of course, you've always had administrative things like food, ammunition, laundry.
Well, let's look at them. Food. Where did the food come from? This
you've got your echelons now. You've got your A echelon, your B echelon, your F echelon.
A was you, wasn't it?
The S echelons are none of the forward troops. They're all the reserve troops.
So what was A echelon?
Your A echelon, you've got your commissars there, where they do the cooking. The RSM's there, with his ammunition. The quartermaster there with all his clothes.
And how far back would that be from you?
7 or 8 miles.
So right out of it.
Right out of there. You can't afford them to get shouted out of it. And then you've got your air echelon.
What about B?
Well, B is an echelon that's very rarely used, really.
What was it meant to be?
Just an admin area. If stuff came up before you get to air echelon, if there was a lot of activity, leave it there, and it would be followed up as our captains.
So F echelon?
F echelon transport. All your trucks.
Now, how did you get your food then? Would you have any food with you, either emergency rations or just a supply of food?
You were supplied dinner about nightly after dark.
So you wouldn't hold any sort of supply at your platoon position?
Very little. But you had an emergency ration.
What was that?
Compo boxes.
Had they changed from when you described it before? I mean, was it the same as in the Second World War? Had they got better at all?
Well, there were a few cigarettes thrown in, serviettes,
but essentially the same system that you were used to from the war.
That's right.
So you had some of that. Now, what food would they bring up at night?
Our meal most nights. Now, the mortar platoon, a lot easier. I'll do a rifle company, totally different when it comes to it. But for us, we don't plan this. We come back here all the way up with his truck. Didn't need a carrying party or anything. No problem. Mortar platoon, administrative.
So he'd just arrive in his truck, and what would you get?
Nothing.
What would that be?
Anything.
It would be British style food rather than rice and stuff.
Well, I must choose sustained foods.
And would it be just the one meal, one hot meal for the day?
Well, just that hot meal for the day.
And would he bring some compo for the breakfast? And
would we have, he'd drop his rations off for breakfast, which we can bring up, with our little bit of food pouch that we got.
What sort of cooking facilities would be in that cookhouse?
Well, that's the old gas burners. Same as they have in caravans today. A jet thing. I'm not telling you off the other food pouch. The main thing was to make sure we had gunfire.
Tea?
Tea. Lots of tea. Plenty of it. Coming up later, one of the things that was a lifesaver in Korea was the self-eating soups.
But not yet.
Not they were not.
That's when you were with the infantry patrol. Right. We'll come back to that. So you'd get, and then you'd get the hot meal, say a stew, and that would still be hot when it got to you.
Oh, yeah.
And then breakfast would be?
We made our own breakfast.
What sort of stuff would you get?
An egg. A dried egg. Bacon. Dried bread. Porridge. Loads of porridge up there with tin milk, which was lovely.
And then what would you have for lunch? Dinner, whatever you call it.
Body beef fritters, spam fritters, and those three cornered sausages and chine pineapple sausage and two butties of that was made up.
Yeah, so and the mortar plume line, you were getting plenty of food.
Yeah.
What about, and you had tea, hot tea. What about water? I mean, would you have a secure water supply, or was it brought locally, or was it brought up?
Yeah, to the mortars, the water cart would come up. Fill your cans up, your jelly cans. The lads would fill the water bottles for their own personal use, because they were brewing up separately, tea, sugar and milk. They'd make one in the dugout while we're getting time, so no problem with water.
Were you allowed to use local supplies of water, or weren't there any?
If there was local supply, you had your tablets.
What were they?
Purified tablets. You could take water from anywhere, put your tablets in your water bottle and it was fit to drink, so they told us. But it did work.
Did it make it taste unusual?
A little. Like being in a swimming pool with chloride. You could taste the tablets that you put in there. You could taste them, but not when you boil it. And of course, when you boil it, it's really bad anyway. So it didn't make a lot of difference.
So that was the food. What about enough water to wash in and things like that? I mean, were you able to keep clean on the mortar line?
Here again, Brigadier Jeffries. Very strict. Every man, this is summer, every man must shave daily. There was no growing bush or little goatees appearing. And if you were growing a moustache, you grew a moustache, which I did at one spell because it was a little dry shaving. Later we'll come on to that. But even in that weather, we had to be shaved, but not first thing in the morning. You couldn't do it.
That's when it got cold, I think you're thinking of more. What about, I mean, were you able to keep clean, or did things like lice arise?
No, there again, especially with the mortars, but even with in the rival companies, tougher in the rival companies, but with the mortars, when it was really cold,
required with seven men backing in a vehicle, quietly, for a shower to the mobile bath unit, and get a shower there